The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. And of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin in the hizzy on this Memorial Day, 2025. I would love to go to a barbecue today.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah.
I have no plans.
Notice that I didn't want to do the barbecue myself.
Oh, just, are you kidding me? That's like the... owning a boat. Like, there are so many good... Like, there are good... It's good to have friends with pools. It's good to have friends with boats.
Oh, the boat is the absolute friends have the boats thing.
Yeah.
Boats are a pain. We get tweets at Beat of the Book. DJ Jams. Will you be doing any live betting the French Open? Maybe send some tweets out. And who do we yell at for not getting your picks out Sunday? You can yell at me. I botched it. Halfway botched it. Then there was one that... Then half of them should have gotten on, didn't. So it's partly me, it's partly the system. So that was not that was not a systemic error entirely. Jack Larkin from Sport Trade. When Wes comes on, can we acknowledge how wild it is to have Scotty as a sub plus 300 favorite in an elevated event at Memorial? Yes, we can. John Balducci, tell me you're going to San Francisco without telling me you're going to San Francisco. Hey, Kelly, can you make this June wins bet for me? Trip Tepper. Hat tip to Richard Gasquet on a stellar tennis career highlighted by the greatest positive drug test excuse in sports history. Blamed a positive test for cocaine on kissing a woman in a nightclub. Mon Dieu. It's like one of the great moments ever. Oh, I kissed the girl. That's how I got the cocaine residue on me.
It's kind of like Cynic with the roids, right? Like, I don't know.
Gasquet up 3-love in the first set, but after this morning, what could go wrong? What could go wrong? This is from, let's see here. Mark Descard, I see 39.5 now in Colorado. Yeah, by the way, Eric Biggio at Will Hill Caesars, they're the only place that has it. Even Michael Montesano texted us and said, no Rockies posted on my PPH accounts. They have everyone else. LOL. So only William Hill Caesars seems to have it right now. Zach Tuchman, if young Gil liked Cerundolo plus 550 for the quarter, he must love him plus 150 down 2-love versus Diallo. Diallo has a, how can I put this? An ability to gack matches, but that is not a good start for Francisco Cerundolo. No question about that. And then finally, from Eric Biggio himself, yes, currently at 39.5 on the Rockies win total. Underjuiced, he says, on the 39.5. Enjoy. So the under is juiced on that.
I was kind of wondering, like, what are they, you know, for. Look, I call the books cowards all the time, so that's, you know, Paul Sporer. I'm glad he joined in on the fun.
I just loved it because
what are the books worried about going, people betting under that because they're so bad, or they're worried about people betting over on such a low win total?
Probably the over, because they've never seen this before.
It's so, kind of fascinating.
Because it's May. I know Paul was saying it's already May, it's almost late, but okay, it's only May. And you have all of June, July, there's an all-star break, but still, August and September.
Like,
you
a ton have, of baseball you games,
have
yes.
You have a third of the calendar year, 4 months of regular season baseball, to what? Win, what are we talking about, 30 games? Surely they can do that.
It's so silly.
He says mockingly, sure, what should be the problem there? Imagine playing on that team, though? Forget about the fact that it's May now.
Oh, no, and you got to go out and do it every day.
Imagine the all-star break approaching, the slog to the break, and then you know after the break you still have 2.5 months of this. Well, I'll just play for my stats.
That's wild.
Wes Reynolds joins us. I know they're all getting paid well. We don't need those tweets because they're fine. They're getting paid $40 million. Wes Reynolds.
I say it all the time with baseball, though, where I'm like, I would be the guy that about halfway through the season, no matter what team I was on, I'd be like, man. Gotta go to work again today. Like, this never stops. I mean, that's where you can tweet it. Like, yeah, they get paid well enough. But
Yeah. From a baseball perspective, anyway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, put it all in perspective with that.
We got Wes coming up in a couple minutes. We are the other couple things I wanted to point out real quick before we get to Wes. When some of these NBA things, like Pacers and Knicks. They just like only went on the road and then you've got the Thunder who so far this postseason can't. Like, they've been dominant at home. Same old Thunder team at home. 0-6 ATS on the road.
Do you believe we have entered? We said this earlier. We've had a different NBA champion every year since, was it 2019?
Yeah, last, what was the last? Yeah.
2018. So what Warriors, Warriors won it in 2022 also. 2019 on, we've had a different NBA champion since. So what's that? That's 3, 4, 5, 6 years. This is the seventh year now. This will continue, you believe? Like, is this the league now?
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
I don't know that I see a... I mean, it would be the Thunder, I think, if you picked anyway. Who's the team that's going to be that dynasty team for a while?
Yeah.
I think if you were going to pick anybody, it's the Thunder, but they still got a little bit more to prove for me to get on that boat. I mean, I think it's still fascinating with this Thunder team of what's the roster look like next year. Because I fully believe... I'll bring up what I said a couple weeks ago. They get to the NBA Finals and win an NBA Finals. They're not doing anything with this roster. It's good enough. We got a bunch of young stars. We're going to build up from here. It's been great. They've all been progressing through our system. And if they lose in this round or the next, I fully believe they should be in the Giannis sweepstakes.
The Giannis sweepstakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe it. Well, Pacers are trying to make it another year in a row. Well, one of these teams will, but could it be the Indiana Pacers? What a weekend in Indianapolis.
Yes.
And in Indiana. Wes Reynolds joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. Oh, by the way, he's also the co-host of Long Shots, the golf podcast. How you doing, Wes?
I'm well, Gil. How are you?
Good. Good to see you at Parlay's house the other night, by the way. Kelly couldn't join us, apparently. Kelly wasn't answering phone calls that week.
I feel so bad. Sorry, Jeff. I feel so bad.
Yeah, Kelly's hard to get, Wes, so it's just you and me there.
Yeah.
We had a good time was had by all. Thank you to Mr. and Mrs. Parlays and to Jeff and his lovely wife. I don't know if she wants her name said or not. Do you think she wants her? I have no idea. What about your Pacers? What about that last night, gacking the 20-point lead? How do you feel?
Yeah, Pacers now 0-4, by the way. Here's an interesting quirk. They're 0-4 on Indy 500 day. So the whole thing with Pacers and Racers. But it's never quite worked out for us. It's a great tagline, but they never seem to win on race night, and they didn't last night. Just I think what happens with this team, and we've seen it even in the regular season with the Pacers, they get up and they get a lead, and they get stagnant on offense. So when you get that lead, you get comfortable, you get a little bit lazier on defense. And I think it was really the stagnant offense that cost them last night, because you could kind of tell when they were up 20 in the first half, the Knicks made like a real little late run. When Brunson, by the way, had picked up his fourth foul late in the first half. So you're thinking, okay, here we go. Everybody's like, the Knicks are done. The Knicks are done. Then they make a little run and they get it to 13 going into the half. And even the guys on the halftime show were like, well, this game's over. It's like, no, it's not. It's only a 13-point lead. And Pacers got it back out to 20, got stagnant again. And then never really could put them away. Just they didn't shoot the ball well from the three. Part of that was the Knicks playing very good defense, probably the best they played in the series. But stagnant offense, I think, really cost this team, and they kind of gave one away last night.
Yeah, I was with Reggie Miller, as someone who was back in the Pacers yesterday. I was with Reggie every time he said it. He goes, I don't know. You know, he kept doubting the Pacers' resolve there, and I was with him. I'd never felt comfortable. The Pacers scored 42 points in the second half yesterday. 42. The Knicks scored 36 in the fourth quarter alone. Knicks outscored them by 19 in the second half. You say stagnant, Wes. I thought they looked like they didn't. I don't know if stagnant was a word. I said earlier, I felt like, I don't know if it was tight. They just didn't look, the broadcast team was giving the Knicks credit for good defense. I thought there was a number of possessions where the Pacers were like, I don't want to shoot. Like, every player on the Pacers was like, I don't want to shoot this. You shoot it. And Tyrese Halliburton was front and center of that. He passed up a lot of shots to me.
Yeah, they didn't move the ball very well. There were a couple times in the second half where Tyrese, he's got an open lane to the basket where he's probably going to get fouled, and he either stops and dribbles it back out, or he passes out of it, because that late shot, Miles Turner, I know Miles Turner's capable of hitting that shot, but that can't be a Miles Turner situation where he had to hit that shot, where Tyrese had an opportunity to try to lay it in for two and maybe get an and one to at least tie the game, but he kicks it back out to Miles Turner for three. That can't be Miles Turner's shot there. That's got to be Tyrese's shot, and he didn't take it.
Yeah, I think it's one part of it. We were talking about this earlier, Wes. I just think it's one of the few parts of Tyrese Halliburton's game that still has to develop and grow a little bit more. He's so awesome, and obviously he's put on quite a show throughout the playoffs, but it is that he's kind of more of an old school point guard, right? He's going to get everybody in the mix. Those assist numbers are always going to be high. You know, assist to turnover ratio is going to be good with him. But, you know, attack the rim, take over when it matters as a star. Those are things sometimes that I think he's still working on. And, you know, it puts a lot of responsibility on some of these other Pacers players. I don't know if it's a long-term concern or even something for the playoffs, but it's just part of his game, right?
It is. And I think also we don't want to, forget about the fact that the momentum kind of got halted a little bit in the third quarter when Aaron Nesmith went out with that ankle injury. Now, he did come back, but I thought that totally halted their momentum a little bit. And we'll see what his status is for game four. The early reports say it's good, but yeah, he went out of the game because he's been, I think, your best defender because he's your primary Jalen Brunson defender. So you need him on the floor. He's not going to give you that three barrage that he gave you in game one in the Garden every single night. But I just felt the momentum really got halted and they're messing around with rotations. I'll actually credit Tom Thibodeau here, which I haven't done much this series, for going a little bit deeper in his bench and perhaps realizing he had to do that by necessity. And you know what? They played better with the guys on the bench with Towns and basically four bench players. That's what got him back in the game.
Yeah, it's a great point about Nesmith. We didn't bring that up earlier. Would you lay the 2.5 with the Pacers in game four?
Would lean to do that because I still think the Pacers are the better team. I think they're the better team. They're the faster team. They're the more athletic team. I think they're the better coach team. But would probably lay a little bit money line here because I think that this is still probably going to go six.
Okay. More with Wes on the other side. We'll get to golf here. What about that question about the Memorial, which is sort of par for the course now with Scottie Scheffler in these futures markets. Did he have Benjamin Griffin at the Charles Schwab? What about the U.S. Open? And his thoughts on the Indy 500? It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Coming right back.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your day with an edge and a game plan. The VSIN Daily Morning Bets podcast is your first look at the day's betting lines, sharp action, and market movement. In just 15 minutes, you'll get everything you need to know to make smarter wagers and stay ahead of the line moves, all before your morning coffee's gone. Hosted by VSIN's team of trusted betting experts, the Daily Morning Bets podcast. Fast, focused, built for bettors like you. Listen to VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast wherever you get your podcast or get in on the VSiN Watch app, the sharpest way to start your betting day. The VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast. Check it out. We had tweets at beating the book. I just want to read this one. Jay Salter has checked in. He says, I thought the same thing yesterday watching the Pacers. All of them played very timid, he said. Jay Salter, who of course provided us, more importantly than his tweet, with all those brownies.
Oh, yeah. God, those were good.
Not only brownies.
Those were good. I'm glad I got it. I'm glad I only had one and got out of here because that would have been a problem.
I had an entire tray.
Or good thing you showed up on Friday. Yeah, you forgot you got your own tray you took home.
Yeah, I was like, this will last me the whole weekend. By Saturday midday, I'm like, where are they? Where is everything?
Scraping the bottom of it.
Brownies. What do you had? Peanut butter balls he was making. All kinds
of
stuff.
Yeah, he did like four different versions.
Yeah, and a white chocolate thing happening in there as well. It's fantastic. Thank you, Jay. We appreciate it. Wes Reynolds, kind enough to join us here for a second segment here. And Wes, when we were at Parlays, I asked you the question, and where does, in your Indiana fandom, because we knew this weekend was coming up this past weekend, where do the Pacers rank versus the Colts versus the Indy 500 as an event itself? And you said Indy 500 still is the top of the mountain for you?
It is, because it was when I was a young dad, because the Colts had not moved to Indianapolis and the Pacers, they were having to do Cool in the Gang post game to get people to come to the game.
Yeah.
Like the Pacers in the early 1980s, like they couldn't draw like 6,000 people. They were bad until the Rifleman Chuck Person came into town, and then they got into the playoffs, got swept by Larry Bird and the Celtics. And then of course Reggie got drafted. But when you brought that up, of course, we were discussing the fact of the sad passing of Jim Irsay, who of course took over the Colts from his father, Robert Irsay. Like Indianapolis was really a flyover sports city. before the Colts came in, and they had built the dome to try to attract a team. They got them to come from Baltimore. And, you know, it's kind of like, if it wasn't for Jim Irsay, I wonder what the sports spectrum would be in the city of Indianapolis without having the Colts there, where we now have a Super Bowl champion. They've hosted a Super Bowl in Indianapolis, which got rave reviews, I think, really across the board. So, you know, that's why my fandom, because the first sport event I fell in love with was the 500. And then, of course, Indiana University, my alma mater, had coach night there. And that's when they were rolling. Isaiah had just won the championship for them in 1981. So that's why the pro teams are like third and fourth for me.
Makes sense. Did you have the winner in the 500 yesterday? Did you bet the 500 at all?
I did. I threw a couple darts. Had the guys that ran third and fourth. Did not take the hottest driver in the IndyCar Series circuit, and that is Spaniard Alex Palou, who was the second choice on the board behind Pato O'Ward. O'Ward finished fourth, but Alex Palou has now won 5 of 6 races in the IndyCar Series. That was the first time he ever won on an oval, because that series is mostly road and street circuits now, and he just timed it right. I think he got that draft from a couple of the back markers that were like at the tail end of the lead lap. So they can't tell those guys to get out of the way because they're technically on the lead lap. So he just got the draft from those guys and was able to keep his pursuers at bay. So Alex Palou wins. Sad for your guy, Robert Schwartzman, Gil. He came in a little hot in the pits and ran a couple crew members over, and it was like, oi, here we go.
Oi. He's oi. Oi. Oi, vey. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Are they okay? Are the pit members okay?
I did not see that. Wow.
They okay?
I think that they are. Okay. I believe that nobody's worse for wear, because there was another one where the crew member got caught on fire, and thank God that safety team, best safety team, by the way, in motorsports in the IndyCar Series, got to him and put it out. But yesterday, there was a lot of chaos very early when you have somebody trying to warm up his tires, that being Scott McLaughlin, and crashes on the pace lap.
Yeah.
You know, when they're not even at speed. So you knew that was kind of going to be a bonkers race, and it was, especially early on.
To golf, did you have Benjamin Griffin, perchance, at the Charles Schwab?
Unfortunately, no. I had Bud Cauley, who finished third, but it was kind of a two-guy tournament at that time with Benjamin Griffin and the German Matty Schmid. But Griffin, by the way, he won the team event a few weeks ago, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans with Andrew Novak. And Griffin's kind of been one of these guys over like the last year and a half, 2 years, if you follow the tour all year long, including into the fall series, who's been knocking on the door to win. The guy was a mortgage broker, I believe, like 3 or 4 years ago, and almost quit the game, and now gets the biggest win of his career, the first solo win there in Fort Worth at Colonial. So a very, very good show by Ben Griffin. He at one point, I think, had a 5-shot lead, and then it got kind of dicey, and then Schmid chips in from off the green, and Griffin's got to make it to safe par, and he did. So well done by Ben Griffin. And you know, you look at like Scottie Scheffler, he played like his B or B minus game, and he still finished tied for fourth.
I was like, gonna say,
like, even when he doesn't play well, he's like on the first page board.
What a hack. Finish fourth, four back.
All right, okay, a couple things real quick. First of all, shout out Ben Griffin, who wears sunglasses on the golf course. I've never understood like why more golfers don't do that. They just get weird in their head. And then a couple of the results. Scottie Scheffler, did you see, Gil, the shot he hit? Was it Saturday, Wes, where he, I don't know, drove it into a ravine or some valley where he like decided to go all the way down and try to hit the ball out of it? And put it on the green. It was like one of the most ridiculous golf shots I've ever seen. And if this isn't the like perfect example of why we bet Tommy Fleetwood the way we bet Tommy Fleetwood, I don't know what is, because this was not a tournament with a massively strong top of the odds board coming in. And Fleetwood, it's just, okay, you're able to keep up with Scheffler, perhaps even had a chance to surpass him at some point, but you still can't get there to get to the finish line and win. This is where I'll stick to Tommy Fleetwood, top 10, top 20 bets until he wins something.
Wes, what about this question from Jack Larkin at Sportradar, where he says, when Wes comes on, can we acknowledge how wild it is to have Scotty as a sub $3 favorite in an elevated event at the Memorial? And I'll just sort of add on to that for you, which is this, the Scheffler phenomenon of this being, you know, more regular than not, this kind of dynamic in our futures odds boards. Has this caused a chilling effect on your bets? Does it create more bets for you? What's the outcome for you?
I guess, a little bit of a chilling effect from an outright perspective, because look, I even bet smaller this week on the outrights, and none of them got there. There was the one contender, Bud Cauley, but you kind of have to do that. I think you have to diversify how you bet this thing. You have to look at placement markets a little bit more, you know, knowing that, hey, that might be where I make my money here, instead of, you know, hitting outrights like we were hitting in January, February, and March. But Scheffler, by the way, comes in defending champion, won by a shot last year. So this is typically, by the way, the Memorial, and even more so now that this is a signature event. You only have a little bit over 70 players in the field. So you do, this is a class field. This is not like last week where it was a regular tour event where you had Scotty at the top and then everybody else was like 20-1 or higher. Mm-hmm. So you do have a lot of the big guns in this field. So that's something to keep in mind this week. But one of the better events, I think, on the tour, certainly from a historical standpoint, at Muirfield Village, Jack Nicklaus's ode to Augusta, by the way. That's what he had in mind when he designed this thing back in the late 1970s. But yeah, you have to change, I think, your approach a little bit in terms of how you bet this thing with Scheffler on such a run right now.
All right. And then as far as the U.S. Open, do we have any bets yet, or are you waiting until week of?
Not yet. Kind of waiting around and seeing who's playing well coming in. Curiously enough, Scheffler is a little bit more of a favorite this week because no Rory McIlroy here at Muirfield Village this week. So a little bit of a gap between Scheffler and then I think that like second tier. It's called a second tier because they're first tier. It's just he's his own tier right now.
What about you, Kelly? You do anything in advance for U.S. Open or no?
U.S. Open, no. I mean, I'd hate to be boring, but it's just kind of what we've seen in the majors so far this year. Scotty, Rory, or Bryson, and let me know when it's on one of the three of them. It feels like that's where we're at right now. Wes, I don't know if you feel differently, but I'm just... And look, I haven't gotten heavy into research or anything or prep for the U.S. Open yet, so I might change my tune on this a bit, but it sure didn't change from the Masters to the PGA, and we saw Scheffler come out on top, so I don't really know that I'm going to feel much differently before
you've
US
become
Open.
Tennis, in other words.
Yeah, right.
In some
yeah,
respects.
Yeah.
Wes, that about right?
Yeah, absolutely. And with the U.S. Open, too, the course is the story,
yes,
usually for the U.S. Open. Like, Augusta plays the same pretty much for the Masters. And then the PGA setups are the same, even though it's a different venue. But it's always, like, about the course. Like, how thick is the rough going to be at Oakmont? You know, and the court, and I think because it's the U.S. Open, the scoring is a lot higher. And by higher, I mean closer to par. So you're not seeing these guys shoot 10 and 12 under. So I think that usually opens it up. So that's why I think it's kind of a tricky major. That's why it's probably yeah, not a given for Scotty, even though he is by far the rightful favorite.
Like I said last week, you know, like we'll see if an Andy North or a Curtis Strange emerges that just plays well on this kind of golf course that is not built for scoring.
Yeah.
Poor Curtis Strange.
No, that's very true.
Two U.S. Opens and probably best known for telling Tiger, "You'll learn." Famous words that will live in infamy. Thank you, Wes.
Thank you, kid.
Thank you, Wes. Appreciate it. We'll come back. More NBA on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Listen to this. Talking to you, Kelly Bidlin.
Yo.
Everybody else. VSiN fans, how would you like to play the Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest for free this season?
That'd be nice.
Winner Circle Proxy, giving away one free $1,000 entry to each contest, plus full proxy service. And get this, you'll be paired with a VSiN host for strategy all season long. Oh, maybe you'll be paired with Kelly Bidlin.
Oh, yeah, watch out. Bengals, week one.
There you go. He already got it. You don't have enough to talk to him. Enter now for your chance to win. Just visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. That's winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. You want to give him week two while we're at it?
Gil and I do have a lot of questions about this. I'm not really sure we agreed to do this of any kind. We'll be happy to help you. But
Kelly, guess what? You're paired with this guy. You're like, wait a minute, what?
No. But no, the better side of it, Gil, is the what if you are someone like, all right, well, congratulations, you won this. You're paired with Kelly Bidlin. What if you're like, well, what if I don't really want to be with Kelly Bidlin?
I don't want Kelly Bidlin. I don't want to be with Kelly Bidlin. He scares me.
Oh, man.
So a couple things here. One, we get tweets of Beatty the Book. This seems to be the most interesting topic of the morning to folks. And it kind of was to me, too. Corbin, good morning, fellas. Hope your morning is going great. Mine couldn't be going better finding $20 underneath a tree at work. How about that?
Nice.
Is a tree at work, and he found it under the tree. Love the crack man and all he brings to the show, but I know there were multiple people shaking their heads. A lot of NBA hardos on here were upset with that talk last week. Let me ask you a question. Were you guys more mad at him or me in that conversation?
I think that's completely different. I think that's a completely different answer for other people. For me, it was you. Yes. For me, it was you. Sit here and bet NBA every single day on this show.
Well, you know how it is with Craig, that we talk about 100 different things.
No, and I know.
It's like, you know, I didn't know if we were going to, I had to make a decision. Do I talk about this for a second?
I'm also not going to blame, like, I'm not yelling or blaming Crack at all, because it's what the segment's been called Unscripted with Bill Krakenberger. He's been doing it for years. He's been doing it for before even I was on this show. Like, he's going to say whatever he's going to say.
Yeah. That's the point of it. Yeah, no, I think it's a fascinating topic because, again, by the way, NBA hardos versus non-hardos in the playoffs is always an interesting thing, period. Mm-hmm. In terms of how this stuff goes, because again, my theory is the no regular season and playoffs are more, you know, just absolutely different animals than the NBA is when it comes to handicapping.
Yeah, I mean, I think any sport that you have to have that you specialize in, right? And I think it is the NBA hardos for I think where that hit home a little bit was just that is where me and Carl, people like me and Carl, put in the vast majority of our time.
Oh yeah,
and it is the only sport.
Yeah.
The only sport that I expect positive returns on every single year, you know?
Well, we all have a couple like that.
Right, you're right. So, you know, it definitely hits a nerve a little bit. But, you know, one of the things me and you have talked about.
Did you want me to stand up and be like, in the name of Kelly Bidlin?
No, man. It's just, you know. But right. One of the things that you've hit on a lot over the past couple years, and I think that we all have to be open to, you know, change and adapting the way that we attack different sports, even the ones that we are heaviest and best on. It's been the NBA playoffs the past few years for me. It's just really, it's been looking back at the end of the year and seeing how good you can do during the regular season, because a lot of the things that we were talking about earlier with Carl, because of overnight lines and injury stuff and rest advantages that you can take advantage of, where a lot of that stuff doesn't come up in the playoffs. And you try to go in it with the same handicapping mentality, and it's just a different beast.
Do you look up at the Killer Sports VSiN Challenge, see Fezzik in first and me in third, and curse us both? Or are you like, no, please, Zach, beat them both, please, for the love of the NBA hardos, please beat them.
Yeah, I said, originally I said I got to get JVT, Zach, me, one of us has got to finish in the top three, okay? We got to show some respect for the NBA hardos at the network.
Oh, Zach will finish in the top three for sure, I think.
But this was also what I thought the top three was, some kind of money payment. So, Zach, you got to finish in the money.
I said at the beginning, I said me and Fezzik were there to pollute this thing, and here we are polluting it.
Yeah, no, that's the perfect word, and you got what? Yep. I'm not shocked to see both of you up there. Are you kidding? You're two guys who know how to play in a contest.
I'm not either, but it's also, you know, it speaks to the NBA difference, I think, between following a regular season so closely that it might even hurt you than help.
Well, that and your guys' experience in playing contests.
Yeah. Well, certainly his. I will say, the other thing that we were just talking about with Wes, which I think was pretty fascinating, was this new time in golf that we've come to, where again it's like you were just describing what men's tennis was, mm-hmm. right, for a long time. Now, I'm not suggesting Scheffler and Rory are necessarily Djokovic, Nadal, or Federer. By the way, do you see the Nadal tribute?
That was awesome.
At Roland Garros?
That was awesome.
That was fantastic. 45 minutes long to a man who won 14 French Opens and had a plaque. They put a plaque in the ground for him.
I don't know really if I fully understood that, but like, the plaque's cool, but it's always going to be covered up with clay. Like, they had to wipe off the clay just to reveal.
Also, if you were going to do a plaque, could you have done it a little nicer than that one? It was like a, you know,
also that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
Like, put something on the wall.
He won 14 of these. Maybe make it a little more elaborate than
that. Yeah, I don't know. It was weird, but I thought it was a great moment. I think it doesn't matter what sport, right? There's so often you get these professional athletes who, like, look, a lot of their family life comes after their career, right? Like, you're having kids and moving around. You're playing so much, you don't get to focus on your kids as much. Whenever you see the kid get there and it's like, realize, like, oh, my God, these people love my father. Like, that was awesome to see.
If he processed it, if his kid was even able to process it.
But, yeah, but I think he could.
But it's, I mean, imagine more. You had this entire life of greatness, and oh, now you're going to be a dad for the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I heard Federer talking about it. I thought it was awesome. I mean, look, those guys, Federer probably said it best that he didn't really think until that era, their era, right, where they really had guys that were playing all at that level that shared or came to share as much mutual respect for each other.
That is the main, I mean, this gets into the corny realm, but that is the main thing that one should take away. I mean, if you're teaching kids, right, sportsmanship, those guys were always so respectful of each other. And they were always, they never threw a racket. Rafael Nadal never threw a racket. Roger Federer never threw a racket. I threw a racket against Fez on the court if I'm like missing a shot or two. It was just amazing mutual respect. When Federer retired, Nadal was waterworks. It was just, you know, the big three and the big four with Andy Murray, right, yeah. Djokovic being three, maybe the best of all time, Djokovic, but Murray the four. It was just a beautiful thing.
And I think it's different. Like, it's different with the individual sports.
Yeah.
Like, where those guys are, all right, you're preparing for these Grand Slams. You've got to go through 2 weeks, and you know at the end of the road, one of those guys is probably waiting for you. Well, and it is mental warfare.
Well, they changed the game. Before they showed up, we thought that if you were 25 years old in tennis, you were done. You're a has-been. They completely changed the sport. They're not tennis Hall of Famers. They're tennis gods. Mm-hmm. That's what they were. Yep. And so relating it back to golf of today, you made a great point, I thought, off air, which is the other thing about that era was the Sasha Zverevs of the world, the Stefanos Tsitsipases of the world, more recently the Holger Runes, who people thought had all this promise in the world. They just kept, they never elevated past it. They couldn't. And so their entire careers are limited because they happen to live in the same era as these guys.
Right.
It's like the Tommy Hearns thing. He just, big crime was he lived at the same time as Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler. But in golf, this is going to be very interesting. Are any of these other golfers, because the Will Zalatorises of the world, I don't know. Is he never going to hit the promise that people thought he would? We'll see about Ludwig Åberg. Obviously, he's still young. You know, Colin Morikawa has won a couple majors, yeah. So we can't really say that about him. But there's other guys like Zalatoris where you're like, is this ever going to happen for them?
So I think it's hard to project long term with golfers, but I think it's interesting what you're seeing this year. And again, I don't mean to really be dismissive of the U.S. Open question. It's just I was hoping I was going to have a different opinion heading into the PGA from the Masters. I really didn't. I think for if you just love watching competitive golf, and I think stars make a lot of these sports better, like they did in tennis for so long, you want to see the stars usually play well and finish well, especially if you're not betting on other guys. But, you know, I think one of the things that is, it's easy for me to say something like that with the U.S. Open, it's just Scheffler, Rory, Bryson, they're just a few of the guys that have actually been consistent this year and consistently good in racking up the wins. And I think anybody else you're looking at, Morikawa just hasn't put it together this year on a consistent level that I'm willing to go to battle with. And I don't really know if anybody's bet more Morikawa over the past couple of years than I have. Justin Thomas, look, I've been in on one of his wins, been in on him a few times this year. He's had a lot of good things working for him, but you know, the accuracy off the tee is an issue, and it's been an issue this whole year with him. Ludwig just can't put it together consistently. Patrick Cantlay, I think he's played some really good golf. I just don't know that he's probably the perfect example of, okay, next tier down, where does it begin? It's probably Is he ever going to reach that? I don't know.
It's not a perfect comparison because, right, those, the big three in tennis, each won 20 majors or more. So it's not quite the same thing, but it does have a feel to it. Let's put
it that way.
It's
when we get to these big, you know, signature events and majors, it's just so much easier to find these guys to poke holes in backing them. And give me one of the big names.
Not only does Francisco Cerúndolo not win his quarter, not only does he lose in the first round, he loses in straight sets.
Francisco!
All three of us had him.
Oh, brutal.
All three of us. We know nothing. We'll recap all the bets next on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, had a silent airport etiquette battle yesterday. Would you like to hear about it?
Yes, I would, because I've got thoughts.
This is not your stereotypical inside the aircraft, the armrest kind of battle. This is a conveyor belt story. So
where are you at on the reclining seats, though, real quick, while you bring it up?
Oh, I don't recline.
Okay, so I don't either, but like if we're going to make such an issue about it, just take away the ability to.
I think you should take away the
ability. That's what drives me the most nuts about
it,
actually.
Are you really that much more comfortable?
No, no.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. So conveyor belt security, right? So, you know, there's an order to it. People put their bags on the conveyor belt moves, you move your bags along. When it goes through under the sort of hood, then you move along in your thing. So I have a guy in front of me who has three or four bags. I'm very last on the conveyor belt. He moves all of his bags except one forward. So I'm hemmed in by his remaining bag, right? I can't go anywhere. I'm not going to touch his bag. A guy behind me, seeing the space, takes it upon himself to go ahead of me and put his bags in the space that guy created, even though that guy's got to come back and get his bag, right? You understand?
Wait, so the first guy still had one more bag left?
He still had to come back and get his bag that was hemming me in, but the guy behind me took it upon himself to skip me and put his bags in the space that was created. I see this and I'm like, oh no, buddy, that's not happening. So without saying a word, both me and the guy gets his bag and me. We go right in front of him and I shove my bags right in front of him and he doesn't dare say a word to me.
I mean,
because he knows he's wrong.
That's fine. The TSA guy wasn't telling people where to go.
There was nobody there to say.
Okay, I was gonna go.
By the way, this is one of these things with age, I believe. I believe if I'm in my 20s, I let it happen. Mm. But at a certain age, you're like, bro. What are you doing?
Not happening.
Stop being.
Well, and if you're the other guy, more important, you want to make sure all your bags are together. Yeah, I'm not waiting for my bag.
That guy should be more upset than I am.
More upset. You've led me into, we complain about things on planes all the time.
Yeah.
The one I cannot understand for the life of me, how the TSA, and this is like, I know there's a lot of TSA complaints out there, but how every one of them, at every airport you go to, it changes on what you need. And I'm not even going to blame that, okay?
Amen.
Because I've brought this up before, and people are like, all right, look, it's different technologies that some of the different airports are. They're not all the same. They don't have enough money to keep it up to date. Okay, that's fine. But TSA agents, don't act like we should all know then every time whether I got to take my laptop out of the bag or whether I'm going to put the whole bag in.
You have 100% hit on something I've never brought up before. It drives me crazy. Not only that, I have been scolded, right? And I have seen people gotten scolded by TSA agents as if there is one uniform way that is accepted in all. By the way, it's from terminal to terminal. Mm-hmm. It's a different way to do things.
Yes, yeah, good point.
And I fly enough where anybody who tells me it's uniform, you're wrong. It's not at all. It's completely different. Each spot has its own, its own way of doing things and its own etiquette. Now we're giving you the card. Right. Or we're not giving you the card. Remember, there's a card involved at some of these places. So it's a mess.
You know what I've started doing because of this, by the way? So what I've started doing, because I know what irritates me the most out of this is, you know, you're not the only one, because there's always the look on other people's faces, too, that are like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I'm taking my laptop out. What do you mean I got to put it back in the bag? Right?
Bro, why are you screaming at me?
This is the biggest. So this is what I've started doing when I'm like five people out, like in the line, the security line. When I'm in close enough to yelling distance where it doesn't come across aggressive, I ask the TSA guy. I'm like, hey, man, laptop in or out? Like, how you want this?
I still say the best was when years ago when they took my sunscreen because it exceeded the 3 fluid ounces. And I had in this tone, I had an argument with the TSA agent. I go, I bet the world is a lot safer now that you have my sunscreen. And he goes, yeah, actually it is. I go, probably not. He goes, no, really it is. We just moved along.
You got to be careful with some of these authorities, man. What was the one with the cop?
Oh, the cop caught me for speeding. And I said, hey, while I have you, a very Larry David moment, while I have you, can you guys doing something about all this stuff flying off the trucks, hitting other cars on the road? He goes, you're more of a menace to anybody than those are.
Okay. I'm sure one of these days these are going to come back to me.
No, I'm sure not. Thanks, officer. Appreciate your help.
Oh, man.
Here's your G-Bank best bets of the day, courtesy of G-Bank, the official bank of VSiN, recapping every host, guest, sport. We're light today. We are
light.
Yes,
we are.
I got Richard Gasquet going in tennis. It's about to be one set apiece. He's a dog against his countryman, Terence Atman, at Philippe Chatrier.
Nice. Well done.
That's really bad. So that's still going on if you're involved in that. It has not been a good tennis morning, that is for sure. And Francisco Cerúndolo gacking the quarter when it was all set up for him in the very first round is first and foremost with that. I am on the Pacers once again. I will be on them tomorrow night, -2.5. I already am on them as the series. They won the last series pre-flop series price for me at plus money. Have them again this series at plus money. +191 was the price last series. I can't remember what the price was this year, this series, but I have them pre-flop here. So hopefully they get it done. Carl Sack is that he wasn't just suggesting he was going to make that pick.
Yeah.
He actually then right after our segment released that to clients. So he is on the Pacers -2.5 tomorrow night as well. I've been on the Pacers every game this series against the number. So I will continue to do that in game number 4. And you are as well?
Yeah, I'll be in on the pay. Yeah, I've got that series bet too. I was kind of thinking last night, am I just going to let that ride? But no, I think coming back in game 4 at this price too, I'm going to play the money line. Look, that's just a... It's an NBA bettors thing. I'm not even going to say we all do it the same way, right? But these short, if you're laying 1.5 to 2.5 points, 3 points, I'll play the money line. I'll take the points always as a dog. So I'm going to play them on the money line, -135. I think it's the best price that I see. I think one of the bigger things we didn't really talk about with that game, there were so many things actually to really talk about now that it's a bit day later. But look, the Knicks and the lineup change that they made. It's I'm not going to say it was bad. Mitchell Robinson's awesome. But I think that Tibbs is a little bit in his head right now and trying to scramble and be. It felt very desperate to make a lineup change for game 3, yeah. Only in game 3 we've been talking about this with Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks for years now. He relies on those starters more than any head coach in the NBA. And to see him pull the ripcord in game 3, man, I think when there's a lack of confidence from the head coach, there's a lack of confidence for me as a better.
What was the Kenny Smith line yesterday?
Oh, God, at halftime. It was a great line. It said Ernie Reeland, where he was like, Tom Thibodeau wouldn't want to play 9 guys in a baseball game if he didn't have to. He played 9 guys in the first half of that game.
Yeah, it's a good line. By the way, hockey, I don't know if you're following this at all, but the real short series is that Florida Hurricanes series. The Florida Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes.
So looking good for me. Shout out to Jonathan Fontobel, sharp hockey better that he is, who gave me one. I'm like, hey, guys, I need a, now that hockey season's here, NBA guys, I need a futures play. And he said, Panthers, Oilers to make the finals. So I'm a Panthers and an Oilers.
Well, so I'm also a guy like a series and a half ago that who was the first team that the Oilers played?
Oh, God.
Was it the, it's already escaping me now. But essentially, my non-hockey brain also was like, I think they could win the cup. And of course, I didn't bet it.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, oh, God, are the Oilers going to win the cup? This would just be perfect.
You were saying that early on. I was kind of thinking it, too, and never did it either.
So the Oilers up 2-1 in their series against the Stars, game 4, is tomorrow night back in Edmonton. I wonder if Andy McNeil will be at that one. Edmonton's a -165 favorite to try to take a 3-1 lead in that. But as far as the closeout, the potential closeout, that's tonight in Florida, where the Panthers are -179 to get the job done against the Hurricanes, who have just looked listless. And as a Caps fan, you know, if you're a Capitals fan, you're just like, we lost to these guys? It's just been awful. So the Panthers and Oilers look like they might be on the JVT collision course.
Yeah, the Panthers
Stars
won.
Stars have something to say about it,
right,
still.
Right. Yeah. Dave and Jensen were talking about this before we went on today, but that line feel a little light to you. This is not coming from an NHL handicapper whatsoever.
The -176?
Yeah.
Based on the way Carolina has played, yes.
In a closeout game and all of that, and I mean, gosh, if you're Florida, I know home ice is not the same as home field, home court when we talk about this stuff, but I don't know. I might mess around with the Panthers a little bit tonight.
Look at you with a little hockey wager.
Well, I might mess around with the Panthers a bit tonight.
Mess around meaning straight on a -170?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you were doing something
else. I'm not doing anything fancy. Yeah, just I might play that.
G-Bank, the official bank of VSiN, courtesy of G-Bank. All the best bets each and every day here on the show and on every show on the network, host, guest, and sport. Introducing the $500 trifecta from G-Bank, First Bet, and VSiN. Listen to this. All you need to do is open a G-Bank Visa Signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your G-Bank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st, a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, man, I forgot to bring up a Casey story for you on the air today. Yeah, real quick, second quarter, I get a text. Probably not the right night to put the mortgage on the Knicks money line. I'm like, oh, man, what are you doing?
Everybody's got a Casey.
Money
Moves is next. JVT at the helm. Enjoy.